Hello there and welcome. Today is Tuesday, January 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the backlash continues over President Trump's immigration ban.
It's disgusting, disgraceful, completely un-American, and I'm here in protest.
The president's team defends the order and says it's totally overblown. Reaction to other big changes to the National Security Council. Also ahead, a clothing line aimed at helping kids change their views on math and science. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump late Monday fired Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, who was appointed by former President Barack Obama after she ordered Justice Department lawyers to stop defending his executive order, temporarily banning travelers from seven mostly Muslim countries. Then President Obama appointed Yates to be Deputy Attorney General in 2015, and she was asked to stay on by the Trump administration until a new Attorney General is confirmed by the Senate. Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions is likely to be confirmed soon. Earlier, White House spokesman Sean Spicer defended Trump's travel ban, saying only a tiny fraction of those entering U.S. territory since Friday have been affected.
It's a shame that people were inconvenienced, obviously, but at the end of the day, we're talking about a couple hours. I would rather, you know, I'm sorry that some folks may have had to wait a little while, but I think the president would much rather know that he's not placing a call to someone who was killed because of someone was let in this country to commit a terrorist act.
Trump himself on Monday called out Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer, who on Sunday issued a tearful statement criticizing the ban.
I noticed Chuck Schumer yesterday with fake tears. I'm going to ask him who is his acting coach, because I know him very well. I don't see him as a crier. If he is, he's a different man. There's about a 5% chance that it was real, but I think there were fake tears.
On Sunday and again on Monday, demonstrators showed up at airports and cities across the country to protest the ban.
It's disgusting, disgraceful, completely un-American, and I'm here in protest. How dare he act alone and sign this document to not let these people in our country?
Well, a number of Muslim advocacy groups across the country have been filing federal lawsuits claiming the executive order is unconstitutional. Joining me now to get some understanding about all of this is Los Angeles-based immigration attorney Naveed Dayzad, excuse me. Thanks for being with us, sir. What is your view on what's been happening as far as the law goes?
For all immigration applications, the executive order has mandated that the immigration services add a whole additional layer of screening that is not part of the statute or the immigration laws. And more specifically, it's asking that the officers that adjudicate all kinds of applications, whether it's application for a work visa or a fiancé visa or a green card based on employment or whatever it might be, that they have to evaluate the person's, quote, likelihood of becoming a positive contributing member of society and, quote, making a contribution to national interest.
Can you break that down as to what exactly you mean?
It's adding a whole new set of requirements to the immigration laws that actually need to be voted on and passed by Congress. And what Trump has tried to do is to add this very significant heightened scrutiny just with an executive action, requiring immigration officers that review any type of immigration application, whether it's an application package for a work visa or a fiancé, student, to now have this extra burden of having to show that they will be a positive contributing member of society and the ability to contribute to America's national interest. Now, both of these goals sound like good ones. However, we have seen already that these kinds of requirements are extremely subjective, and adjudicators, the immigration officers, can actually require a very high standard for someone to meet this. So as an example, they may be able to say, if you're not working on a cure for cancer, you're not serving our national interest, you're not contributing positively to our society, denied.
As someone who practices immigration law, would you say that this has issues with its constitutionality?
Yes, and a very basic one, and that is that the president does not have the power to create new laws. The president's executive power is to interpret and execute laws. Congress is a branch of the U.S. government that creates and passes substantive legal requirements.
Have there been any lawsuits filed for this specific part of the law?
I have not seen any yet, and that's probably because one of the other areas that we'll get to is a lot more urgent and time-sensitive. In fact, the court has said that the other area, which I'm referring to, is the ban against certain travelers to the United States, can cause irreparable harm if it's not stopped immediately.
But Donald Trump says this is not based on religion. Can it be legally proven otherwise and therefore unconstitutional?
For discrimination, you have to show that there's an intent to discriminate. And none of us have our x-ray vision or can tell exactly what's going on in someone's mind. So we look to circumstantial evidence. We look to what else is going on around the issue. And when Rudy Giuliani makes such a statement, that really does shed light as to the true intent of this executive order. Similarly, Donald Trump, on the campaign trail, said himself that we should ban all Muslims from entering the United States. Given his own blatant statements and this poorly crafted executive order from a legal perspective, it's clear that this is nothing more than a thinly veiled attempt to discriminate.
And lastly, is it unconstitutional to ban people from certain countries that you deem dangerous?
You know, there's an issue of due process and equal protection. And this is really one of our sacred values in our Constitution and in America. And this provision assures that at all levels of American government, the government will provide fair procedures. And what has happened with this ban on travelers from certain countries is absolutely not a fair procedure. What has happened is that there are immigrants who have been going through the government's own immigration process for 1 year, for 2 years, being vetted. I would say extreme vetting is what happens to many of these people. They've gotten to really almost at the finish line. They're beyond the finish line, actually. They've gotten their visa and their passport, and they're on an airplane to come start their new lives here or be reunited with family. And at the 11th hour, they land at the airport, and now the U.S. government is saying, we are revoking these visas. What has happened here, I believe, is unconstitutional insofar as it does not meet the standard of due process. I should also mention, though, that when it comes to immigration matters, it's a little bit more difficult to prove that law is unconstitutional. The Constitution does give the president pretty wide power on immigration matters and in choosing who can enter the United States.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective. Los Angeles-based immigration attorney Naveed Dayzad. Turning now to what's trending on social media, and you guessed it, the immigration ban. Joining us for more on that, G. Abby Lee. Hey, G.
Hi, Lori. So I spoke with Steve yesterday about the nationwide protests against the executive order, and this Monday, Twitter users are talking about those who are supportive of the ban.
Ah, okay. So what are they saying on social media about it?
Yeah, so the support is mostly seen through poll results, and Quinnipiac poll tweeted, around 45% of American voters support limits on immigration. That's based on a poll conducted earlier this month. Stig Abel, who is the editor and publisher of the London-based Times Literary Supplement, also tweeted this. I wonder how many people in middle America are angry about Trump's ban or even think it is that important or controversial. Some experts are saying the travel ban is great news to Mr. Trump's core support base. Iyad El-Baghdadi is an activist from the UAE, and he tweeted, international bodies like the UN calling the ban illegal is the best pro-Trump advertisement for his supporters. He argued the president's brand is based on taking back America's sovereignty.
Okay, so what's been trending outside of the United States?
Quite interesting. Come next month, a shop in Tokyo, Japan will sell limited quantities of Kit Kat sushi.
What? What's that?
So the treats will have a twist on classic sushi featuring tuna, sea urchin, and egg flavors. So it's on a bed of what looks like kind of rice crispies, and then on top of them, Kit Kats.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's candy sushi, but that has
weird savory
flavors like seafood. I know. I can't even imagine.
I don't know.
But here is the thing. Interestingly, some of the photos that I've seen on the Kit Kats also has captions, April Fools. So I'm not even sure that's actually happening, but it is 2 months away from April, so unsure. But many Twitter users are definitely sharing the photos and their thoughts on that Kit Kat. Also in Japan, the father of the uber-popular arcade game Pac-Man has died. Masaya Nakamura passed away early January at the age of 91. He founded the video game company Namco that launched Pac-Man in 1980. If you're an 80s kid, you definitely know what I'm talking about. People are writing that he brought Pac-Man into the world and that he is a gaming hero. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. And follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Obama criticizes the immigration ban, saying American values are at stake. U.S. Senate presses ahead on Trump's nominee for Secretary of State. The Trump travel ban presents dilemma for Europe's leaders. And the Trump-Putin phone call, a toe in the water. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues now. President Trump's senior advisor, Steve Bannon, will have a permanent seat at White House National Security Council meeting, solidifying his role as one of the most powerful members of the president's inner circle. In an executive memorandum signed over the weekend, Trump elevated Bannon while downgrading the status of the director of national intelligence and the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff on the Security Council's Principals Committee. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer commented Monday on what he characterized as misreporting of the memorandum of the National Security Council that Trump signed last week.
The president also signed a memorandum modernizing the structure of the National Security Council and the Homeland Security Council. There's been a lot of misreporting this week about what this memo does and does not do. So let me walk you through this real quick. There's two issues at hand. One is the makeup of the NSC, and the other is the makeup of the Principals Committee. The Principal Committee is merely the NSC minus the president. The idea is that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the DNA are being downgraded or removed is utter nonsense. They are at every NSC meeting and are welcome to attend the principals' meetings as well. To be clear, the memo lays out that if there's a principals' meeting that is outside their scope, for example, a homeland, a domestic issue that doesn't pertain to the military, they're not required but certainly welcome to be in attendance. We recognize that certain homeland security issues may not be military issues, and it would not be in the best interest of the Joint Chiefs' valuable time to be at these meetings.
Well, Bannon is accredited in large part with successfully orchestrating Trump's presidential election victory. He led the Breitbart News website, described by some as a haven for the alt-right anti-mainstream movement. Joining me now to talk more about this shuffling within the vital part of our government is ex-Central Intelligence Officer Jack Rice. Jack, what is your view of what's happening here?
The decision by the president to put Steve Bannon in this position is really unprecedented. And the reason is that the NSC has always been about trying to make apolitical decisions. It's about keeping politics out of this so you can come up with the clearest, best decision possible so you can provide that information to the president so he or she gets to make the decision. When you actually add politics into the decision-making process beforehand, you can skew everything before the president gets it. We've never done this before, and there's a lot of really good reasons not to do it. And so to do it like this now is petrifying to a lot of people who've been involved in national security for decades.
Petrifying for the reasons you just gave, or are there others?
Well, they're petrifying because, first of all, the kind of person that Steve Bannon is and what he has stood for in the past is of deep concern to many, many people. This fear of somebody is almost Islamophobic approaches that he has perpetuated and what that can do. But as much as anything else, it's the politicization of it all that really makes it the scariest. Especially, this is somebody with little to no experience of any kind, certainly at a policy level. And then to put him in the place that they have, while at the same time apparently lessening the role of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the director of national intelligence to say that they'll be involved on issues that directly relate to them. This is the National Security Council. This was what it was designed to do. The NSC is about synthesizing a great deal of information to provide that information as objectively as possible to the president. And if what you do is exclude major players, you exclude information. If you then overlap politics, you morph the information. And that's a really bad idea if you're trying to get a true and accurate picture of what's going on.
The administration pushed back on that, saying that the National Intelligence Director and the Joint Chiefs of Staff are welcome at any time and that they have the, quote, utmost respect for them.
The idea of saying that after you minimize them and say, well, they're now welcome, they were critical to these decision-making processes in the past. They needed to be there. They had to be there. Now, to simply say, well, you know, when you're in the mood to show, I think it speaks for itself.
What does it say?
My perception is what this really does is this, is it minimizes actual intelligence. And what it maximizes is the politicization of the process itself to get the answer that you want rather than the answer that comes from the facts as presented. And that is a disaster from an analytical standpoint. And this is the reason that the intelligence community exists. This is the reason that the Department of Defense, when it comes to this kind of issue, exists.
And finally, do the president's executive orders involving immigration have any national security implications as far as you can see?
They do, and they're dramatic. Right now, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and other organizations, other terrorist groups in the world are using the language of the president to support and recruit anti-American behavior. Because what they're arguing, and have always argued, is that America hates Muslims. The problem is that it's not just language anymore. It's policy that's being implemented based upon the president's executive order, which establishes that that is American policy now. This makes the world a more dangerous place. I'm not talking about the moral implications of letting people in or not letting them in. I'm simply stating that terrorist groups will use this as a further justification to kill Americans.
Okay, well, we appreciate your perspective. Ex-Central Intelligence Officer Jack Rice, thank you so much. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
VOA's International Edition continues now. U.S. financial markets marked their worst day of 2017 on Monday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average and broader S&P 500 both slipped by more than 1.5%, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ was down just under 1% as uncertainty over President Trump's partial immigration ban created confusion and protests. VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino in New York shares the day's trading moves with VOA's Jim Stevenson.
There were 74 days in a row without the S&P 500 going down 1% or more. That's the longest streak that we've seen since 2006, which is interesting because This comes on the back of a record-breaking week as the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, and NASDAQ Composite traded through fresh all-time highs, with the Dow breaking that key 20,000 level. But I think a lot of Trump's policymaking over the weekend is really what fueled that downside fire to the markets. Hong Kong and Shanghai are closed for the Chinese New Year for the week. But let's take a look at the immigration ban. Besides the human factor, the obvious factors there, Iraq is taking reciprocal action against the U.S. So you have to think military, civil engineers, oil company workers, relief aid workers, tech workers that are not going to be allowed to enter Iraq. That's going to have economic implications and impact the markets. If Trump is willing to stop legal visitors to the U.S., then what may stop him from sequestering capital that belongs to foreign investors? So this does have some implications on the market. We could dig a bit deeper and take a look at NAFTA and what he's trying to revise there. Canada and Mexico are the number two and number three trading partners. Almost $1 trillion in goods, or 30% of total trade, goes back and forth between our country and the other two annually. This signals that it may be more tenuous to do trade with the U.S. Who is going to want to increase trade with the U.S. if it becomes more difficult and more tedious? So the immigration ban certainly has implications on the market. NAFTA is going to lay out more uncertainty when it comes to trade or commerce. So those two things have been weighing on global and U.S. markets.
So far, Trump has been delivering on campaign promises that he made during more than a year and a half of trying to get to the White House. Some of the promises included deregulation and also perhaps repatriation of money from overseas. We haven't seen that yet, but are the markets anticipating that this may be coming because he, in fact, is enacting other things?
It's tough to anticipate what he's coming because it's almost the problem du jour and how he reacts to that. So just like what we saw with the run-up into the markets, we've almost moved 5 to 6% on the upside in the S&P 500. Traders and analysts are concerned that as investors, we may become too complacent in the market. On the flip side, they're also concerned that Trump is trying to make promise on his campaign rhetoric, and there are a lot of legal and financial implications with a lot of the policy that he's trying to lay out. The other concern is, even if you look at it from the protester point of view, it gets to a point where the political and social environment is so overly saturated that we might lose sight of what's really in front of us, and all of these ideas and themes get diluted.
All right. VOA financial correspondent Jill Melandrino in New York sharing the day's trading moves with VOA's Jim Stevenson. A cool new concept is happening here, a clothing brand now working to make nerds cool. And in case you didn't know, nerds are considered kids who are into science, engineering, and math. Orain Barrett, a New York entrepreneur who calls himself the chief executive nerd, joining me now for more on his new line of inspirational clothing. Thanks for being with us. Tell us about it.
It's a brand that will inspire future cool nerds and expose kids towards, you know, pursuing their passion, especially in the area of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And the way the brand works is simple. For every product sold, it unlocks a mentor and tutor, which is a college student that will work with middle school kids, to inspire them to, one, go to college, but also may expose them to this career field of science, technology, engineering, and math.
Is it to inspire kids?
We have to know. If you are from the inner city, if you know what we call the hood, right, pop culture is pop culture, right? It's an attractive thing, right? So you're talking from fashion and music. So we said, you know what, instead of just making it where, for example, I did the Big Brothers program when I was younger, as an older guy going into the community and working with kids, we said, let's not only tell them about what a nerd is, right? A nerd is a person that's passionate about a certain subject. So much in the past that they were outcasts, but now nerds are popular in social media from Zuckerberg and others. But it's their passion as well that drives them, from Pharrell with music to Victor Cruz with football. They talk about being nerds because they just love what they do. And then cool people not conforming. So putting the two together, a cool nerd is a person that pursues their passion without conforming. And that's this generation, where they're rebellious and what they want to do, they go after it. So we wanted something that we planted the seed of, okay, this is we want you to be future cool nerds. We want you to pursue your passion, but not just think it, but wear it. Let the world know your individuality in the sense of telling the world who and what you are through a brand that we feel that identifies with the way how this generation thinks. So that's what it is. It's using the apparel as a marketing tool to communicate who you are and communicate a positive message as well. And we have other new slogans and designs and concepts that we're going to roll out to really communicate the values of cool nerds, which the core values of what we studied of from today's cool nerd is hard work, intelligence, individuality, and it's all driven by passion. And passion is the engine of every nerd.
You've already enlisted some high-powered athletes, I see. as brand ambassadors?
Yes. So the Seattle Seahawks players, a friend of mine was wearing a shirt with, doing some community service work with them. She was wearing a shirt, and a few of the players called me. I was like, dude, get out here. We want to get behind this. Another friend was doing some work as well. Dagmara Wozniak is an Olympic fencer. At the time, our friend, I remember, she was like sixth or eighth ranked in the world. She learned of it, and she talked about, you know, being a cool nerd in the sense of, oh, less loving fencing, didn't spend time idling with her friend, but was in the gym just practicing and practicing. So they draw naturally to it. Again, our goal now is to really get these type of individuals to come forward as we now release the brand. The one issue that we struggle, and I have to say this, is that originally when we launched the brand, we did it through our quote-unquote social impact side through our 4.0 program, where $4 of every sale was donated to STEM programs. That was a little complicated for the consumer because most people don't know STEM. So we said, let's simplify it, and for every product sold now, it unlocks a tutor, which will focus on the area of science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, which are the college students to middle school kids. So it's simplified now. You buy a shirt, it unlocks the tutors, and behind the scenes, it's being focused on that area field.
And lastly, there's sort of a story behind all of this. You know, you moved with your family to the United States from Jamaica, and you are living proof that someone from elsewhere who immigrates into this country can really have something to offer.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Hard work, education, 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 and work two times harder than the next person is what my mother, my father preached. My mother more so because she's just the driver in our family, right? But she always pitched that.
All right. Well, we appreciate your time. Former banker and now CEO of Cool Nerd Clothing, Orain Barrett. Thanks for being with us. And thank you for joining us. That does it for today's show. You've been listening to International Edition, and you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's been nearly 22 years since the signing of the Dayton Agreement ended the Bosnian conflict. But to this day, ultranationalists within the multi-ethnic country of Bosnia and Herzegovina are attempting to sow hatred, spark strife among neighbors, fracture the country along ethnic lines, and push agendas that prioritize their ethnic group at the expense of stability and prosperity for the country as a whole. As stipulated by the Dayton Agreement, Bosnia and Herzegovina is a single sovereign state comprised of two entities, the Federation of Bosnia and Herzegovina and Republika Srpska. The Dayton Agreement also established the office of the High Representative to ensure the implementation of the agreement. In 1997, the international community granted the High Representative special legal authorities, also known as the Bonn powers, to assure that Bosnia and Herzegovina's political entities comply with and fully implement the peace agreement. In September 2016, President of Republika Srpska Milorad Dodik held a referendum to designate January 9th as Republika Srpska Day. And on January 9th, Dodik led the celebration of Republika Srpska Day. Both the referendum and the holiday itself had been banned by the country's constitutional court, which found the holiday discriminatory against non-Serbs living in Republika Srpska. For his role in defying the constitutional court of Bosnia and Herzegovina in violation of the rule of law, thereby actively obstructing the Dayton Accords, and for conduct that poses a significant risk of actively obstructing the peace agreement, the United States Treasury Department has sanctioned Milorad Dodik. This means that any property or interest in property Mr. Dodik has within United States jurisdiction is blocked, and U.S. persons may not engage in transactions with him. The United States strongly opposes challenges to the Dayton Agreement and rhetoric that advocates secession for the Republika Srpska.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is for what's the universe?